Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast.
Originally founded in 2010, as Two Champs and a Chum, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and the world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community.
This is Season 12 of the White Book Podcast. Welcome back to episode 481 of the podcast, now usually known as Props and Slops, or the White Book, if you've really been sticking with us. And for all the crap that we give our listeners for being, you know, in the single digits, there's still 100 some odd, like, listens per episode. So
what do you do on the weeks we don't do Props and Slops?
Oh, hang out with the wife or other friends.
There's not even like a White Book proper at all.
Not currently. I've been thinking about popping back in with a little Thrones content. I actually played some games over the weekend with one of the local guys here, so I may do some soon. But yeah.
Oh man! Next time we do this, we've got a Wheel of Time to talk about.
Oh crud! You're right. Oh, well, that could be the next big thing. That could be our big break.
We'd have to start a whole new podcast with like episode one. That's... And I don't think you're willing to do that.
Are you just willing to do both?
kinda, probably. Like, right? Like, I don't know. I spent most of the past 10 years doing a podcast a week. This once every 2 weeks thing is less.
Yeah, like, that's true.
By definition. We could get on Twitch and do it. I bet you we could convince half of the Thrones community to come watch us talk Wheel of Time.
Yeah, we might be able to. I'd have to, I don't know, invest in a webcam or something if we're on Twitch.
You would need to invest in a webcam, yes.
Yeah. Never actually done that.
Teachers no longer have that concern because we all have webcams because we taught that way for a year.
Yeah.
It's true. I did do that.
It was hell.
Yeah, but I could pet
my dog. I could pet my dog, and when I needed to go to the bathroom, I could go to the bathroom when I wanted to go to the bathroom. That's something I really miss about online learning. Although I found out I shouldn't say this on the podcast. Never mind.
I mean, I'll say this on the podcast. When I have to go to the bathroom and I have a class, unless the class has 5 minutes left, I go to the bathroom. I'm just like, hey, guys, I'm going to the bathroom. I'll see you in a couple of minutes. And they go, what? And I say, don't burn anything down, please. And I walk away.
Two of my four classes, I would trust to do that. Maybe three on a good day. But there's definitely one that I would never in a million years. And that's always the one right before lunch that I really need to use the bathroom.
I'm mystified. I did not think that out of the two things Roy mentioned, I did not think the bathroom thing would be the big seller for you guys. I really would have thought it was petting the dog.
I mean, I enjoy petting my dog, but like when you have 80-minute block periods and you teach three of them in a row. And
you guys are
no
on the block schedule.
Break. There's no one around.
Do you not have a union that says no to shit like that?
Whoa, don't say that too loud. My bosses might hear you.
I mean, Christ. If, like, our union would lose our mind. We do four in a row of regular 40-minute periods, and we're like, absolutely fine. In no way, shape, or form is that happening. It is not contractual. Try again. Like, yeah. Unions are good.
Yeah, I will agree with that. Softly. I'm in Maryland, so maybe it can't break the space-time.
At least you're not in Virginia.
Space-time continuum?
It's true. Go all the way to travel to Washington, D.C. But I shouldn't say the U word too loud.
Union, union, unionize America. It is the surest way to fix some shit without shooting everyone.
Dire.
Dire Wolves?
Oh, there we go.
Or the Dire Straits.
Oh, man, look at all these Thrones references Aaron's dropping. He must be getting excited for House of the Dragon.
I know this is going to shock you, but I would rather mail you my eyeballs that I carved out of my head than watch House of Dragons. Unless my wife makes me, because I love her more than carving eyeballs out of my head. No.
You wouldn't spend an hour of your life.
You don't understand how much hate I have for
that. That could be our other big podcast break, though. We already have like a built-in Thrones audience.
So here's how this is going to work. My wife really likes Roy. Like, I think she likes him a fair amount more than me. And my wife loves Allah. If either of you ask her to watch it, we'll be watching it.
I mean.
Challenge accepted, Roy?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'll probably watch it. So I don't know. We'll see how I'm feeling. When is it coming? It's the summer, right?
It's just everyone yelling fire and blood a thousand times.
Yeah. It's sometime next year. I mean, whatever. Next year is a million years from now. I can kind of think about Batman coming out in March. Like, that's about as far as my, like, pop culture brain can go. Like, I'm like, ooh, the Batman movie comes out in March.
I can get to Witcher, which is December, right?
Yep, there we go. Yeah,
there you go.
Hype for so Witcher. Close. That's what we should do. We should do the fantasy TV show podcast.
I mean,
just focus.
We can call it Fan TV.
I think that's got to be taken.
I was going to say, I think that's
Let's taken. See. Fan.
But it's not a bad idea to just focus on every.
Fan.tv does not exist.
What?
Let's see.
Go.com. If that is not registered, it's got to be a premium.
It doesn't exist. It's ours. I mean, that's it. We're booking it. If you steal it now, you're stealing your intellectual property.
Oh, no. If this is under like $20, I will claim it. Okay.
We say we want?
Someone Fan. Owns TV. It. They just haven't set anything up. Because when I try to register it through Namecheap, it does not give me a price. It just says taken, make offer.
So on GoDaddy, thefan.tv is available.
Okay. Thefan.tv. The fan, like fantasy.
Fansite.tv.
We're the fan TV.
Fanclub.tv.
Fan.quest. I
mean, no, we want fan TV, like, because it sounds like fantasy, or but it's fans of
Fanly.tv. Fanly.tv.
No, the fan TV.
Or what about fans.tv? Fans plus.
I mean, thefan.tv is not a horrible web name.
Right.
Okay, fans.tv is also taken. We can workshop this. We don't have to do all of it on air.
I mean, this feels like it's going to go Eternals-y.
Yeah. You mean go on far longer than it should have while people just...
No, that's not true.
Explain things instead of showing it happen?
We're going to have a diverse
set of opinions, I feel.
I honestly
enjoyed Eternals, but it had some weak spots.
No, it didn't go on too long. That's unfair. Like, it went on the right amount of time because... Nothing good, like the whole beginning just could have been cut.
It was, yes, that's a great point, because three of the weak spots to me are, well, exposition related, and one of them directly relates to what you said, Aaron, and for me that is that giant info dump monologue from Arishem. It's literally like 5 minutes of two characters literally standing there, not moving, talking to each other, where the Celestial just decides to freaking explain everything. And I'm like, this is an hour into the movie. This is admitting that nothing happened in the last hour.
I mean, yes, the movie is not so much a good movie as it is a really good last third of a movie. I thought the last third of the movie was fantastic. Except for that Robb Stark is the worst actor in Major
League. What?
Oh,
I actually
no, he was great.
Disagree with that.
Yeah.
I thought he was
good
in it.
Yeah, he's a pile of garbage.
But that's so interesting, because I felt he did a really good job of like getting across the like frustration of Icarus, right? Like he looks frustrated the whole movie, but then there's the twist at the end where there's a reason why he's frustrated the whole movie, right? Like,
I mean, I think we're spoilerful. Like, I think you can say it, Roy.
Right, right, right. The, I mean, the fact that he ends up being the villain of the movie. Like, and then, like...
I mean, is he even a villain?
I mean, he's the villain. Yes, like, they find him at the villain. End. Right, like, I mean, he's the antagonist. Wow, usually Glazer gets, like, this tedious about using the right English teacher word.
Well, right. No, 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 I wasn't doing that. It was more of a, like, part of the point is they kind of present you with a moral quandary here. He's maybe a darker shade of gray than some of the others, but, like, he's working with two different moral quandaries, right? Duty versus love, and... the needs of the many versus the needs of the few. And
well, the needs of the very many, maybe, versus the needs of the few.
Right.
Well, for me, like, I've actually enjoyed Internals the more I sat on it and thought about it. I think the performances are strong, and I think it does a really good job of doing something where it uses the MCU to try to tell, like, a different kind of story. I think its problem is that it says the loud part's quiet, which is that this is a movie about imperialism and the ways in which people are, like, part of a violent culture and told that the violence and destruction that they're doing and the colonization that they're doing of places is in service of something. But then they figure out and realize that it's not, and that everything is a lie. And when that happens, some people, Icarus, are going to freak out and lash out against the people who they love and care about. And then some people are going to realize that they need to side with the oppressed people that they have been destroying. And
people are going to do nothing.
And some people are going to do nothing.
It's not revealed to be a lie. The movie never says... The movie does, in fact, say that this is really happening.
Right, but... is what the Celestials say true? Like, is blowing planets up to continue the Celestial race?
I mean, the opening crawl, which admittedly is another weak point in the movie, says, like, this is what they're doing, right?
It says that's what they're doing, but, like, that's like me saying I came over and took over your house and stole all your land because for... the awesomeness of Roy.
No. There's, right? There's like, is the character saying it or is the movie saying it? Like, this is the really, like, shallow interpretation here. But, like, when the screen, like, overlay says something takes place in Budapest, like,
Wait. But the opening scroll specifically explains the Celestials' mythology as told to Eternals, right? Like, the opening scroll thing explains the Deviants without their true nature, explains the Eternals without their true nature, all that stuff. It sets up the false premise. So we understand that the opening scroll can be lying because it blatantly is about almost everything. I don't think the Celestials are lying. This is a very Marvel thing. I think it's quite a choice because making the universe definitive in this way closes off a lot of storytelling opportunity. But I don't think the Sentinels were lying about why they wanted to make more... not Sentinels, sorry, excuse me. Celestials were lying about why they wanted to make more Celestials. But, like, what they don't examine is why they need more Celestials to make more universes, right? Like, if Arishem can create both universes and Celestials, there's no reason for him to need more Celestials.
I mean, I agree. Like, I mean, like, I'm not, like, what I'm just saying is you don't have to take the Celestials on their word, right? Like, that's what I think one of the things that Cersei realizes, and the Deviant just, like, comes out and says it, and says, like, Eternals have been committing genocide both against Deviants and against, like, random species throughout the universe to further the Celestial cause. Now, you can argue, if you want, that that is worth it, and that is what Icarus sort of does, and what's-his-face, Kringo, more explicitly does.
Kingo,
right. But you don't also, you can also say, like, no, this is an oppressive space god that's going around and saying, it's really awesome, and this is also true to the comic book source material. The Celestials are not always treated as a positive force in the comic book universe as well. So, like, this isn't some, you know, the Celestials are always good. No. Like, I think that moral complexity of it, and I think that I think it's like too much for Disney, and they dialed it back and made it a bit more like of a sub. It's there, but they didn't say it as loudly as I think that the movie really wanted to. And that's where I've been a bit more disappointed. I felt that there's actually a lot of thematic depth to this movie compared to your average Marvel movie, but I feel like Disney did blink, and that kind of takes some of the punch out of the film.
I didn't think the thematics were the concern. I thought it was just amazingly poorly paced.
And it's because it spends too much time showing instead of telling instead of showing, my bad. Trying to flip that. Not only the Airsham thing, but I think the opening crawl kind of gets into that territory. And it gets out into some weird weeds where, like, who is the intro really for? Like, because it mentions a bunch of stuff that you only get if you're a comics nerd. So it's not, like, really introducing it to the casual audiences. And the whole Hiroshima scene.
Yeah, that was a thing. And look, we didn't need... Okay. So there are a lot of flashbacks in this film. I think most of what didn't work, except for the invasion of the Mexican city, the name of which I will not brutalize at this exact moment.
Modern-day Mexico City.
Right?
What?
Modern-day Mexico City.
Yes. The destruction of said city was the only flashback I needed. I hated
the Babylon stuff. The Babylon stuff was pretty necessary.
Why?
Yeah, most of the flashback stuff was just like light character building. Like,
yeah,
it was not integral to the plot.
I feel like the Babylon stuff was the most showing, not telling. Because one, it showed the relationship between Robb Stark and Cersei. It showed how the Eternals operated in the past, right? It showed like the basic setup of what they were doing as like protectors and improvers of humanity. Like, I don't think you necessarily needed this flashback that goes kind of to India, but I feel like the at least one flashback to the past was sort of necessary.
I think their arrival covers most of that ground.
Yeah,
I thought their arrival just retreads it.
And like, we established the relationship when it's like, oh, so this is the ex, and with the 18 awkward conversations Robb Stark, who can't act for romance to save his life, had with Cersei about their relationship.
I thought he was great, but yes, he and Cersei did not really have any chemistry, which was awkward.
It was two hot people that have absolutely no heat.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fair.
But like, so like, if they were just like, if you literally caught all of those except that one, like you have them arrive on Earth, you establish what their role is going to be, and you say 1500 years later, they realize their role changed, right? Like maybe like you, or go more chronologically, right?
Oh, no.
Yeah. I was seeing a thing recently that basically posited that the blowback against this movie is basically because not necessarily that we got an actively like bad film, but that the film we got is not what was advertised to us about this epic, you know, era spanning story and the love century over millennia and whatever. And we didn't like, I think like Aaron's saying, kind of going chronologically through some of these different ages, If they mattered and they learned different things through them, like then that would have been one way to tell the story. I mean, where that would have connected.
If you want me to care about Cersei and Rob, you don't introduce them to me as broken up while she's dating someone else.
Yeah.
You sit there and develop their relationship slowly, and then you have their breakup be a huge emotional beat. And that breakup, or like, even like having their marriage be the huge emotional beat before we find out about the breakup could be really affecting and upsetting. But because we meet her already moving on with already an extremely famous actor, right? Like, it undercuts the whole relationship, regardless of the heat or lack thereof. It just undercuts the emotional stakes of that relationship because you know how it ends. And like, the mystery of how they broke up is not especially compelling.
I mean, like, at least not the way it's really told. It's really glossed over. If you blink, you'll miss Icarus saying basically, "If I stuck around, I was afraid I would have spilled the beans."
Yeah, But, like, fine. That's whether they made it a major plot point or not, right? They built it up like a major plot point. There's no emotional stakes to a relationship that we're introduced to as ending. As over. As not as ending, as already done.
Yeah, like, far so, over. It's been 500 years.
Yeah. So, like, if you want to tell that story, and, like, I think that story is probably worth telling, you need to sell me on the relationship before you tell me it didn't work. Because, like, they're not going to do the, like, reconnecting lover story, which I think is what they were trying to tease. But again, giant pile of wood, Robb Stark. And, like, it's not like Jon Snow is just going to disappear, right? Like, Kit Harington.
We already know, like, he's a character, like comics character. And
yeah, I mean, even if he's not a comics character, he's Kit Harington. This isn't like they got, like, I don't know, random Big Bang Theory character person, right? Like, they got, like, a major star from one of the biggest TV shows ever. He's not going to be a throwaway, like, well, he's sort of a throwaway role in this.
I mean,
he's not going to just
Black Knight. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Dane Whitman, Jesus.
I mean, if they're bothering to bring Dane in like this, though, they're going to make him more major than he has been for a long time.
I mean,
my gut feeling,
he loves 70s Marvel, man. Like,
yeah. Oh, see, I think of the Black Knight more with the 90s, like that, the 90s Avengers, like Galactic, Operation Galactic Storm up through, like,
was Operation Galactic, like, Storm in the 90s?
Yeah, I think it was like 92, yeah. Maybe.
Galactic, yeah, very early 90s.
Yeah, but like up through like 2000 or so, like I think the Black Knight and Cersei and White Vision.
So given, like,
they're setting up that team effectively.
Given that they're, yeah, they're, I don't think they're doing that at all. Given that they're tying him with Blade already, I think they're going to redo the forming of the Avengers, but it's going to be the Midnight Suns.
Yeah, it was slightly tweaked. I mean, we're,
I would not be surprised if the Blade movie ends up being a buddy cop movie of Dane Whitman. And
see, I want like a buddy cop movie. Like, now that we're getting all these characters, I want to see some weird combinations. Not big ensemble shows, like, or movies, whatever, like Guardians or Avengers, but like weird combinations. Give me a 3-episode miniseries on Disney Plus where Bucky and Black Knight have to team up or something, like unusual pairings, and see how those characters bounce off each other.
That's the other thing that's been said about Eternals. They would have made a better TV show than movie. And
yeah,
I think
it either needed the extra time of a TV show, or as sacrilege as this would be to some people, it needed to cut about 4 Eternals.
Yeah, no joke. I cared about maybe 3 Eternals. I also really liked Druig.
Yeah, I think I cared for about 4. Really? See, I keep seeing so much online where people loved Druig and his performance and stuff, and he was the really awkward wooden one to me. I did not buy anything out of that guy.
I bought everything he was selling. I really liked Druig. I didn't need, honestly, and Angelina Jolie didn't even have a plot.
She did have the worst Marvel like plot device I've ever heard in my life. For a moment, I thought I was just mishearing some sort of foreign, you know, celestial word or something, and then I realized no, they're literally just saying mad, weary. They're just saying that she's angry, tired. Like,
no,
oh my
crazy
god,
tired, wrong, mad.
Crazy tired. Sorry, she's crazy tired. But it's the same sort of concept. If they'd named something, you know, angry, tired, hungry, mad, like, just it hurt.
Whatever, it didn't bother me.
I thought we could, like, I enjoyed Angelina Jolie. I actually like her a fair amount in most things she's in. I didn't think there was a plot. I thought that she was just there to, like, foreshadow some stuff, and then, like, she doesn't get any sort of resolution.
She kills the guy who killed Gilgamesh.
Yeah, sure, but, like, that wasn't her plot for most of this, right? Her plot wasn't a revenge plot until, like, I don't know.
Well,
2 hours into
trying
the movie,
to overcome her trauma.
It was trying. Yeah, but like she doesn't. She just sort
well,
of
she,
stops.
No. She says specifically to Gilgamesh repeatedly that she doesn't think she can fight. And then she fails to fight. And that helps lead to Gilgamesh's death.
Yeah, but
and
it doesn't.
And she is able to fight Kroll.
Yeah, but it doesn't make sense that she doesn't think she could fight because, like, the Mad Weary doesn't seem to make her unable to fight.
Right, but she can't fight as herself.
Fight,
you know what I mean? Like,
the other
she, as an Eternal, as a member of their little family, right? Instead, she's a threat to them, right? I mean, that's what they're going for. I'm just saying there is something there. I'm not saying it's like.
Yeah, I just don't think it was developed or, like, worked in any way.
Well, there's, like, 20 Eternals, so, like.
I don't need her, the Eternal. I probably don't need the speedster, who is also delightful.
She was very charismatic and had some of the coolest fight scenes, but she has no particular impact on the plot.
Nope. Like, if you could have just killed the Eternals leader and all the others could have gone away. The Inventor guy was cool, and I enjoy that Marvel said, fuck you to China, but he wasn't super needed either. You just do hand wavy space magic. You don't need the Inventor. Like, it's all like just you need the like
and
four
really,
or five.
Really, you didn't need Kingo either, as
no,
entertaining as the,
like,
he and his valet were. But.
But if there was no Kingo, I would have walked out in the first 2 hours of that movie.
That big of a fan, huh?
I mean, he.
Of the comic character or of the actor?
Oh, of Kumail. Okay. Like, he was the only, like, he and his valet were the only entertaining thing about that movie until the twist, I think. Like, I love everything after the twist, like, literally every scene after the twist I'm a fan of. But I liked almost nothing before the twist, except Kingo.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's worth it. Sorry, my hesitancy is about liking everything at the end, but.
Oh, I like absolutely everything from the, literally from the betrayal on, I'm all in.
It was extremely
foreshadowed, but even so.
No, I'm fine with the plot beats. I'm a little bummed that Icarus is the traitor this time around. I mean, that's also one of the like tropes with the Eternals is that one of them keeps betraying the whole rest of the family.
I mean, usually
Druid
is the most powerful,
but it, the way they presented
Druid
Icarus,
is
it makes
the
sense.
Villain
one. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. But Druid
so
was so cool; he can't be the villain.
Well, he's usually the villain in the comics.
Yeah.
I know. But the comics usually suck, so whatever.
I was fine.
The Gaiman run?
Oh, the Gaiman run's fun.
The Gaiman's the only decent one.
I heard the Kieran Gillen one is
also. I've read the first three issues. I need to go back and read because now there's half a dozen or more, I think, out.
I would assume the Gillen one is good. I'm talking more about, like, classic Eternals. I read a bunch at random times.
Oh, like classic cosmic Kirby craziness, basically. Yeah.
And I love Kirby. I have all the time for Kirby bullshit.
It's late period Kirby, though.
Yes. But even so, like, it's Kirby, so, like, Kirby gets extended an awful lot of leeway.
Oh, yeah. Like, original Eternals is very pretty. I don't know if it's the most, like, well,
coherent
and coherent story, but it's very pretty.
Ooh, Netflix is making a live action Yu Hakusho.
There you go.
Yu Hakusho? Why does that sound familiar?
You don't know Yu Yu Hakusho? It's
I feel
anime.
Like they do.
Spirit detectives and random tournaments fighting for some reason with spirit detectives.
Oh, I
very
I think
90s anime.
I think I've seen it. 90s. Like, the name sounds familiar, but, like, it doesn't jump off. But it's probably because I read the manga and I don't know how to pronounce Japanese, so.
That's possible. All right.
All right.
At the end of the day, I'm propping Eternals.
Same.
I think if you are bored of the Marvel formula, but like Marvel, it is the movie to see. Because it is not Marvel formula.
I don't know how we're not talking about the Eternals and not talking about the most important thing that happened in the movie.
That horrifying Pip CGI?
Well, you're close. But Harry Styles being Eros / Star Fox, who they called Star Fox, and said he was the brother of Thanos.
Yeah.
Like, what? Like, that was, to me, I was like, wow, talk about leaning in.
That was there. And honestly, once I saw him, I was like, you know, really? Who else could play Star Fox? Like, Harry
Styles, he is the ultimate fuckboy of Marvel cosmic characters, so casting Styles as him is perfectly reasonable thing to do.
Yep.
It's going to make the next project that he appears in extremely popular. People love Styles.
He is the biggest deal to the kids.
Yes, they love him. Okay. I mean, there's like 7 young women who have Harry Styles stickers on their laptop, so he upside down stares at me while I teach.
Yeah, kids have been going to see the movie because they know Harry Styles shows up for 2 seconds. They don't care that it's 2 seconds. If Harry Styles is in it, they must see it. I have heard exactly 0 Harry Styles songs ever.
We've almost certainly heard one in the background of something, but yeah.
I mean, sure. I'm sure I've heard it. I've never consciously known a song was by Harry Styles. My wife just started singing Watermelon Sugar to me, which is apparently a Harry Styles song. Oh,
I didn't realize that was him.
Guess what? I've never heard that song. Or again, never consciously been aware that I've heard of a song with that name. I'm old and don't care. But he is very handsome and good for him.
He's very handsome, very rich, and beloved.
I really, 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 really hope that Kevin Feige is smart enough not to turn him into a villain, because he is not ready for the wrath of the teenage girls.
I mean, what if he's a hot villain, though?
Yeah, I mean, oh, he could Loki worked out real well.
Yeah, he could Loki, and then he gets a Disney Plus show, and then everyone has to subscribe to Disney Plus. Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right. Props Eternals.
Yep, I agree. Yeah,
I'll soft prop it. It had a few storytelling weak points, but overall it was fun.
Yeah, I mean, it had a lot of weakness. It just also had a lot of good strength.
Yeah.
Bookworm and the Beast sounds like a Will thing.
It is. And I'm going to go ahead and straight up say that I slop it. Kristen was looking for some Hallmark-style movies to watch, but wasn't ready to get into Christmas stuff yet. So we watched this one. And as you can guess, it's a retelling of Beauty and the Beast. But has the most horrifically bad plot of one of these films that I've ever seen. And I normally, you know, enjoy these, take them for what they are. But in this one, the Beast comes off as just such an incredible, insane, entitled asshole. He's a some sort of businessman who's CEO of this company, and he's buying up, you know, blocks of this local town and going to shut down the local flower business and coffee shop and all that jazz.
Sounds like a great dude.
Yeah. But for some reason, also, he has this huge social media following, and people are like mobbing him when they see him, and he has to have his like security people act as decoys and draw them away and stuff. I mean, which is
for a Hallmark level male actor, he's relatively handsome.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did the Google. So,
but then get this. He bumps into the bookworm. They kind of have their little meet cute. It goes well and then goes poorly, and they wind up, you know, getting angry at each other. He gets in his car and angrily speeds off and then hits her dad and puts him in a coma.
That's amazing.
That is kind of amazing.
And then over the course of the next hour, the two of them fall in love.
Of course they do. Oh, I mean, Will, you've watched enough of these. Like,
oh, yeah.
Read it, like, that's about as predictable as like,
yeah, it, I just, oh, it's so like I said, I normally enjoy these for what they are, but this one stretched my credulity completely beyond what it could do. So slops to Bookworm and the Beast.
So I'm going to slop Titans. Season 3 is like hellishly bad.
Oh, yeah?
Like, we've got like 2 episodes left, and we're just watching it because Carlo wants to finish it. But like, they've made every character completely unlikable. There are no plot points I find slightly interesting. It's so bad. Like, I don't have a comparison for it, but it's one of the worst shows I've ever seen. Please don't watch Titans season 3. Perhaps don't watch Titans at all, because season one wasn't actually good either.
season one was charming in its way.
Okay. Season one wasn't good, though.
It wasn't good, no. Season two is not good either.
Season two is a value of good.
It's much funner than the first season.
Yeah, season two is entertaining and engaging. And season one is a show that I watched that had some moments. And season three is the last season of Game of Thrones Level Dead.
Yeah, I mean, I did stop watching it. I will probably watch it all over Christmas. It got incredibly stupid and obnoxious.
Yep.
And their version, it started off strong, I felt. But then once they revealed why Jason became the Red Hood, I was like, no, this is like too stupid. And like too against literally everything that they had previously set up about the character.
Yep. I mean, look.
It suffered from the Riverdale problem, which is that like it keeps this perpetual drama machine going and twist machine going, but it continually undermines what was set up like 10 minutes ago. So there'd be like Jason did something at the end of the second season and sets up his character a certain way. And then one episode later, he's doing something completely against that character. That characterization. So there's just, and I mean, and Dick also suffers from that too. Like, I still don't understand that wolf episode. Like,
oh God.
Like, I truly don't understand what they were trying to say in that it's like, Dick's actually a murderer? Like, I don't.
What?
It's a weird episode. It's very weird. It's very, very weird.
I mean, there's the one where Dove tries to shoot Jason Todd and instead blows up Hank Hall.
Like the scene
I was like, is just bad.
That I was like, I can't believe they actually did that when I was watching it.
I was so happy because he is the worst character.
He isn't.
But
then Dove was gone. I liked Dove, but I also like Mika Kelly, so.
I didn't like Dove either. Carla did. But like either way, like it was just, what are you idiots doing? Like, this isn't a plot you should be running.
Well, I mean, we shouldn't be surprised at the end of the day for a show that basically set up Nightwing in its fourth episode and then spent 12 more episodes, not more than that, 18 more episodes before Dick becomes Nightwing. And like, it's like, they keep threatening for him to become Nightwing. And then he's like, nah, I'm not going to be Nightwing. And he just runs around without a costume on for like two seasons. Like,
well, that's a way to appropriate someone's culture to do it.
Yes, that was such a dumb twist.
But like, but like, that was dumb and funny.
It was dumb and funny.
Right? Like, there's nothing funny in season three. It's just dumb.
Well, it's because they really wanted to do a Joker story, but they're not allowed to use the Joker in live action television shows.
They did. He shows up. He's the one who kills Jason Todd.
Yeah, he shows up off screen.
No, they show it, sort of.
Sort of. They don't really show it. Like, they show a silhouette beating him up. But, like, come on. Scarecrow, 90% of the things he does are Joker things. In that season.
Yes.
Like, it's not Scarecrow. Like, that's like, it's a kind of Scarecrow.
It's not anything.
It's just, like, but it's a more of a, like, Joker thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, why couldn't you just come up? And why are you turning Scarecrow into Hannibal Lecter? Like, it's just...
I mean, he just snapped his mother's neck in the worst scene I've ever seen on television. I just can't. All right, just slop it. Please don't watch this shit. Let's talk about something better.
I don't know. Glazer hates trailers, so I don't know if he really wants us to talk about the Spider-Man.
I don't know. Well. Yeah, I probably should have a question.
I don't hate trailers. I just don't watch them. Like, I don't. What good does watching a trailer for a movie I know I want to see do?
Makes me excited.
Yeah.
Brings me joy.
But I want to see it. I'm already excited.
It's anticipation and joy. And theorizing about what's going to happen in the movie.
Yeah. I enjoy the theorizing.
It's going to have Spider-Man.
That is definitely true. It also Spider-Man? Has,
Spider-
it also has
Spider-
Michelle.
Spider-Man? Spider-Man's? How do
I hope there's a Muppet Man made of spiders.
Do you know the Muppet Man?
Muppet Man.
No, this one was about a different character that leaked via a pretty convincing screenshot today.
Just say it.
We're good with leaks? I wasn't totally sure if we were good with leaks.
Oh, I don't know. We've never done leaks before.
I know, right?
I don't know.
One of the things is a long confirmed fan want. The other one is like so obvious that it's going to happen.
Sure we want to piss off our last listener?
I don't care. You know, I'm already 9-10 level spoiled. I'm more spoiled than either of you are, than Will is, so about what's going on in that movie. So,
but I'm the only child.
You said you're more spoiled than me?
Yeah, I'm an active reader of the Marvel Studios spoiler Reddit.
Yeah, like, so am I. That's where I saw this screenshot. Day.
Okay, well, it also went to other places on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
All right, just all right, people.
Yeah.
Five. Well, okay. This is your chance to run away. I'm going to count 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then come back in like 2 minutes. We're only going to do 2 minutes on this. 5, 4, 3, 2, spoil away.
Matt Murdock does indeed appear to be in the film in a very convincing screen cap.
Is it Homeboy from the TV shows?
It is Homeboy from the TV.
It's Charlie Cox, and he looks just like he did in the show.
Cool. Good for him.
He's playing Peter's lawyer, most likely.
Yeah, it's Matt Murdock. What's the other thing?
Do you want to guess? It's very obvious what it is.
I mean, I need some, like, there's a million ways I can go.
Set up the multiverse, and villains are coming.
Venom, we're doing Venom.
Nope, not Venom. Close, though.
Carnage?
Nope. Bink. There's been two previous Spider-Men.
Green Goblin, Doc Ock.
Yep, they're all coming. But that's already been confirmed in the poster that they officially released. It's Toby and Andrew are in the movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we did that.
That's an open secret for David. Charlie Cox was the one I was uncertain about till today.
Yeah. Yay, Charlie Cox. All right, cool.
I'm excited for the Spider-Man part. It'll be fun.
I'm going to like that movie a lot. All right.
I mean, it's got Willem Dafoe in it, so... Yeah.
People, 5, 4, 3, 2. We are done leaking.
I don't know why you counted back in, because the people that didn't want the leak already like skipped forward or something. So
yeah, but maybe they heard me counting and were like, wait, didn't he count already? And like stopped in confusion.
and then rewound and heard the leak anyway.
That would be so funny, especially if it's Sam. All right.
That'd be good.
All right. Roy apparently likes LOLing.
What?
Lol.
No, in this case, League of Legends.
Yes. So I watched the first two episodes of the League of Legends TV show. I was going to watch the third, but Aaron was like, you should come play
Storybook Brawl?
Storybook Brawl. So I haven't watched that. Play
anything else?
Not anymore.
I looked at the new magic thing. I was going to play the new set of magic, and Sam went off on this giant rant about Monoscrew. And I was like, huh, I remember that feeling. And I just loaded Storybook Brawl instead. Go ahead. Sorry.
It's fine. So several of my students guilted me into watching it. And I was like, you know what? Whatever. I know vague enough about League of Legends lore to make sense of it somewhat, and you know, I have my phone open and Google characters. It is extremely well animated and pretty well done. Like, it's not groundbreaking storylines that, you know, it's not a twist on these tropes that is like, oh my god, gonna blow your mind away, but it is extremely well animated and competently done. And if you like League, you will really like it. There's a whole moments, Al and I were kind of laughing while we were watching it, where like it's so clearly supposed to mean a lot when like two characters like meet or interact and they like introduce themselves to him and it like pauses and you're supposed, you know, if you cared about it, you'd be like, oh man, Joe and Charlie have met for the first time. And it's, I'm like, what am I supposed to care now? Oh, I guess I should Google this person. Okay. Oh, okay. This person is an ally of that person in the game. Oh, okay, cool. All right. So, like, if you like League, I almost certainly have already watched it. But if you haven't yet and thought that you would like to, it's definitely worth watching. The animation is really, really well done. The voice acting is really good. And it's, like, just a fun set, like, version of these tropes. Like, it's nothing innovative. It's not going to, like, blow your socks off in the sense of, like, it's, like, you know, really reworking the genre. But it's, like, really competently done steampunk fantasy. Very surprising for, you know, someone who is not overly into Riot stuff and has more than a little contempt for Riot's creative department, I am impressed with this thing that they've output, that they've put out.
Cool. I will not watch, but I'm glad it exists. Hey, can I say the thing that I think is really dumb about Eternals and bothered me a lot?
Sure.
I usually don't care about this kind of thing because I read comics. This is constantly a problem in comics, right? But like, the whole point of the Eternals being on Earth was secretly to help humans advance so that they can get advanced enough that the Celestial would come out. Like, A, it's obviously they would get there faster if, like, they just gave them the technology rather than waiting for wars for people to figure it out on their own, right?
Yeah. And but if, like, Druig mind-controlled them so they didn't kill each other and just reproduce like rabbits, like, all the time.
All of this would help, right? Like, but, like, what really killed me is, like, we couldn't help with Thanos because the Eternal Soul's not too. But they also argue that the snap prevented for a while the thing. Yep. So, like, that's a direct contradiction, right? Like, that's not even, like, I was willing to overlook the other stuff just for the sake of the film. But when like, one of the characters is like, hey, why did you trouble Thanos? It's like, we were told not to. And then, but, like, the Thanos snap thing stopped the whatever. The Eternal popping out of
her. Delayed it. Didn't stop it.
It would have stopped it.
No.
It's kind of like,
it would have been another few hundred years, right?
Yeah, if you drain the battery of something, it took from 75 to 50%.
Like, but like, if the goal is to, like, have the Celestial baby be born, like, one would think Thanos would be a big threat to that, right? Like, why not just stop Thanos and then the baby can be born? Like, why wouldn't... So they're in constant contact with whatever his name is, the Sentinel Daddy. Celestial Daddy. Like, wouldn't Celestial Daddy have been like, hey, I know I told you not to fight anything with deviants, but y'all can go fight that Thanos dude. Wouldn't that have made perfect sense? Like, yeah. I mean, I know why it didn't happen, but, like, then don't call attention to it.
Right.
Like, sorry, it's just, like, well, I'm willing to just be like, these are all a shared universe, but they're kind of not in some ways. Fine, but don't be like, hey, here's a plot hole, want to look at it?
Yeah, I hand wave a lot of the, hey, why doesn't so-and-so get involved? Because, like, that's just how comics need to work. Every time Galactus shows up, we can't have, you know, friggin' Red Rocket and Spider-Man and Dark Force and, like, whatever obscure characters always show up because, like, it's just not gonna work.
Look. While the world is ending and Celestial Baby is being birthed, like, some of Earth's superheroes probably should have noticed, right? Like, yeah. Doctor Strange should have been like, huh, I should be there for that.
Doctor Strange is busy all the time, man. Like, he's busy not fixing his roof.
The point is I'm fine with that. I understand that for the purposes of telling a story that can't happen, but you know what they didn't do on the island? They didn't all stand around, look at each other, shrug and go, yo, where's Doctor Strange?
Yeah.
Did that with the Thanos thing, and it's like, you idiots, all you had to do is not mention it. All you did was break my suspension of disbelief.
Yeah. Like, there was kind of a similar beat where it was just like, just don't mention this and it would have been fine. But they drew my attention to it and it super bugged me. Makari, whatever. I don't care that they've tweaked the gender flipped the character. I don't care that they've tweaked and made Makari deaf. But what I do care about is when you go out of your way to have two characters quietly whisper to each other and hide their faces so that she can't see and read their lips about how they're going to, like, defraud her. And then for her to catch them and to sign that, oh yeah, you know, like, I could feel all of the vibrations from that. Like, if she has that level of, like, perception, for all intents and purposes, really, she can hear. And it
will. Something upsetting to tell you about Daredevil.
Yes. I know. Like, just don't.
Yeah.
That's to me, that is a level of nitpicking, Will, that's a path that you're going to have to take yourself.
All right.
Yeah. Okay, we can move on from Eternals finally again. Sorry about
that. We'll try. We'll probably come back to it again before the show's done.
All right, Jason Mee's Avengers, go.
Yeah, so I was looking around for some more stuff to read on Comixology. Of course, I'm kind of in a Marvel mood now after watching Eternals. So I saw Jason Aaron's Avengers is on there, which I also found very interesting because it's the first comic I remember reading, like mainstream comics like this anyway, like the franchise comics, that is like the title of the book is Jason Aaron's Avengers.
Wait, it is?
It is? In comics, the Avengers.
In Comixology, oh, the title is Jason Aaron's Avengers, which is super weird. I haven't seen that with anything else, like Neil Gaiman's Eternals or anything like that. So it was very strange to run into. But I've been reading it. It's been fine. It's not really a mix of characters that I love. I like Robbie Reyes. Having him join the Avengers, it feels a little weird. I just don't think he plays off them well. Having this romance bit between She-Hulk and Thor also feels weird.
That his whole treatment of She-Hulk is pretty.
That version of She-Hulk sucks.
Yeah, yeah, it's
they're rebooting
it. What else has been kind of weird? The whole Avengers Mountain thing, which it looks like maybe the Eternals film is setting up with the whole, you know, dead celestial that somebody can build a base inside of. Not sure. I dig that. I'm cool with Black Panther being elected chairman. That seems great, but like Cap still seems to be taking charge and like doing everything.
Did you know that book is terrible?
Yeah. But also, did you also know that the Avengers having a chairman who is not the field leader is a classic Avengers trope? Come on, people.
Okay. Like,
it existed before Bendis. Avengers existed before Bendis.
That's fair. But also, the book was terrible.
Yeah. I like Jason Aaron. He's a good writer, but this is not clicking for me. And it seems to be like suffering from something that I feel like I'm running into more and more often now in mainstream comics, where like there are gaps. Like I'm reading an issue, and especially when I'm online, I have to flip back and forth a couple times to really make sure, like, wait a minute, did I accidentally like double click and go two pages forward? Like, it feels like there's a hole here.
I've heard that Jason Aaron's Avengers is pretty notorious for that in general.
Yeah.
It's pretty notoriously bad.
And some people love it. I mean, it's a seller. Like,
some people love Chuck Austin's X-Men.
Well, that is an untrue statement. Mm-hmm. There might be one thing that unites all types of X-fans. It is that Chuck Austin's X-Men was terrible.
That's strange. I always thought the one thing that united us all was love of Adam X the Extreme.
I have seen people go to bat for that version of Juggernaut.
That one slept with She-Hulk as well.
Oh, yeah. Look, that's one of the worst comic runs I've ever read. Did you know Chuck Austin? Did you know Chuck Austin executive produced parts of season one of Steven Universe?
I had no idea.
Good, yeah, for Chuck Austin.
I saw his name on the fucking...
Are you sure it's the same one? Chuck Austin?
I looked it up. And I was like, that can't be. There's no way. But that's in wild. Fact... Yeah, so here we are.
He's also executive producer of She-Ra and the Princess of Power.
Oh.
Yeah, the first season of Steven Universe. He worked on the Cleveland Show. King of the Hill as well.
So he should just not be allowed in your comics.
He's Dawn of the Croods perfectly as well, if you're a Croods person.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the first one was pretty fun.
Interesting.
All right.
What else we got?
All of the Marvels next. I read the first four-ish chapters of the book Roy recommended last week. Mm-hmm. It's the traveling through Marvel history. I am engaged by it, but I don't like its organizational premise. Like, I like the idea of going character by character, but I don't feel like what's his name? Right?
Douglas Walk, I believe.
That Walk is doing a good job of explaining why, character by character, he's going in the order he is.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I mean, the character by character thing breaks down in, like, the final third of the book.
I'm fine with the character by character thing. Like, I think it's a cool look, right? But, like, I just feel like he's jumping back and forth chronologically about the issues he really wants to talk about, right? That's the premise. But he's not doing it chronologically, and he's not doing it seemingly thematically, and I'm not entirely sure why he's jumping where he is when he is, and it's lost me a few times where I'm like, wait, what? And I, like, have to double check when the comic came out or something like that.
Did you...
I'm not a huge fan.
Which characters have you made it through?
It's just Spider-Man and Fantastic
Four. I feel the Fantastic Four chapter I didn't feel was very strong and was the most, like, jumpy around. I think the Spider-Man one goes mostly, like, straightforward.
It doesn't. It starts with, like, a, like, Marvel Event Free Comic Book Day Spider-Man issue. And, like, it's just, it's a lot of weird stuff.
The Spider-Man chapter is also the one I had the most thematic disagreement with him about. But it was very interesting.
Yeah, he said some really weird things about Spider-Man.
I thought they were interesting.
But yes. It's not where what I think of a Spider-Man
either. Yeah.
I don't know. I like each individual section a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I like the parts a lot. I'm not sure if the whole is living up to them.
I'll be interested to see what you feel of the X-Men section, which is a very interesting...
I'll get there.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a little while before I come back to it because I got a guide to Japanese role-playing games, which is like 1,000 pages of essays about Japanese role-playing games. And if you've been listening to this podcast...
You do like Japanese role-playing
games. I do like Japanese role-playing games. Also, it's a limited edition book from Bitmap Books. So if you have any interest, it's about $50 and it ships from England. And it keeps selling out, and it takes them like 4 to 6 months to restock. So if anyone wants it, go get it. It's called A Guide to Japanese Role-Playing Games. But if you just Google JRPG book, it's like one of the first options.
Okay. The next wave is November 22nd. So.
Huh?
Of the book. The next one you get to buy is November 22nd. I just Googled it.
Cool. So mine arrived today. But they also, when you buy it, they send you a PDF. So I've been flipping around with the PDF, and now that I have the physical copy, I'm just going to sit and read from, like...
How long are these essays? It's a lot of books, or a lot of games.
It's...
God,
Lord. Oh, some are shorter, some are longer. They're pages each, but, like, fairly small font.
Kingdom Hearts.
Excuse me. The only... I read the... history of JRPGs, which goes through the console generations and all the innovations within each of them. And I've read the second chapter, which is on translation and why translation was so funny and how translation is so difficult and all the technical aspects of translation, which had a lot of stuff I've never really thought of in it.
Interesting.
But I heavily, early on, and we'll come back to this because, again, I'm going to be reading it for a month, I heavily prop it.
I might grab it.
You should. I think cool. You would like it.
I'm trying to not buy more books.
That's a losing game right there.
Yeah, I failed
finished
that.
At least one. I was doing a good job of reading. I got about halfway through an excellent book that is The History of the Republican Party. And then I got halfway through the Douglas Wolk book, and then I got stalled playing Storybook Brawl. So
I've been taking note of the playground. So I tend to have a book on my phone as he's running around.
That's fair. I can't have books on my phone. I just end up scrolling through Twitter or Reddit.
I start there, but I don't. Like, I'm trying to do less social media.
Yeah, see.
That's a good idea all around.
Well, a lot of Tales games on this list.
Yeah.
Only one Persona game, though.
But there's an SMT whole section. There's like a 30-page section on SMT. I'm sure Persona will get plenty of space.
Yeah,
interesting. By the time this comes out, SMT5 will...
It will be out. Receiving solid to spectacular reviews.
Yeah. It everything I've read, it's basically an SMT game. Not a Persona game. It's an SMT game. It sounds like an SMT game.
Yes, but it does have difficulty settings, which is nice.
Yes. I mean, so did the remake of Nocturne.
Four did.
Nocturne, yeah. So, like... Nocturne's big problem to me wasn't even the difficulty. It was the map is such a nightmare.
Yeah.
And, like, they fixed that in this game. So I'm not super worried about it. All right. Let's just skip the other book that you two don't care about and talk about our book Brawl and call it a night.
Sure.
The other book, Mox?
Yeah. It's a book about a wrestler. His name is John Moxley.
Oh, I was hoping for the magic card.
He wrote a book called Mox, like the Mox Emerald, my favorite magic card.
There you go.
You mean... what's the name of that card?
I don't know. But it was awesome because it drove...
Spirit Sentinel. Boom. Got there.
Drove Ewan Clemens crazy, and it was great. I drafted it so highly just to annoy you. All right. The card ended up also being great.
It was good. It's a good card. Constructed playable.
Russell wrote a book, and it turns out he's got an amazing writing voice. He didn't graduate high school, but he's got an amazing writing voice. And, like, even if you're not a wrestling fan, I think his, like, just random ramblings, it goes into a chronological order, and each chapter is a rambling. He has a really great chapter on sandwiches. And how he considers himself a sandwich connoisseur. And, like, I don't know. It was a very fun read, and I read it in, like, 2 days. So I'm going to prop it. Also, he went to inpatient alcoholic services, like, in the middle of one of the biggest moments of his career because he decided he needed that while he has a newborn child. And I was very impressed, and I think that was a really mature decision. So I like him a lot. So extra props. Starbuck Brawl update, and I'm bad at the game now.
Oh, no. This
is, by the way, just over 24 hours since the last.
I mean, I've only played today, but I came in third once, and I've won nothing else. I've lost hundreds of points.
Glazer has descended to us plebs who slowly grind.
Really good. I was really good at the last, like, since I figured out the game through last update, I was really good.
It is a pretty fundamental reworking of how the game works.
Yeah, I cannot get a grasp of this, of what I'm doing with
it.
You'll
get a grasp of it.
I'm usually pretty solid at this, yes. But, like, this one is not intuitive in the way that either of the previous ones were.
Which is good. Because the last meta got solved very quickly and became all about Slay all the time. I think they did a good job of bringing Slay into a more fun place.
Yeah. And they reworked, like, everything. So
I mean, they did.
I think my favorite thing about this game is how much they're willing to just be like, it's been about 3 weeks. Time for a totally new game. Go figure it out.
I think it needs a slightly bigger influx of new cards for undersupported themes. But this one did do a good job of that on many axes. Like, so I hope that dragons, for example, get a few more cards in future updates to sort of make them an actual playable something close to mages, which is a theme that can be played but is not like a you fall into immediately.
Yeah, that I should stop trying to force.
Yes, that is half the reason why you're not succeeding, Glazer.
I am aware, but it's so fun when it works.
I know. Well, that's the thing about specifically Storybook Brawl is there's some archetypes that you can get into, and Battlegrounds had this too, but Battlegrounds is a little bit more prescriptive than Storybook Brawl is. That are just like always just out of reach, but you get them once, and you're like, oh my god, I can never go back.
Yeah,
and Mages is definitely one of those. I find that for the when the spirit pops off. Those spirit builds that, like, pump your dudes up a million. I like watching those numbers go up.
That's a very you statement. Storybook Brawl remains exactly what I want in a game in almost every way, though.
It's very enjoyable.
It's enjoyable. It's a half hour for game start to finish. It's totally free if you want it to be.
Yep.
Like, there is nothing. I mean, I guess I don't like that you can't pause it. But that's obviously not going to be a thing you could do anything about.
Correct.
Like, it'd be nice if I could be, like, in the middle of a game, be like, ooh, I've got to pee without being like, oh, this is a problem. But, like, I don't know. Or go get a water and not lose round one and then have everyone yell at me for the next
round. Hey, I wasn't yelling at you. That was
cool. I got scolded.
You did, but that was not me.
That was not me.
I was losing my own game. All right. Will?
Yes.
I have a couple of things.
Ooh. That
I
wanted to... Okay. That weren't on the list?
That aren't on the list.
Why are you...
One, I found out just a few minutes ago, and is very upsetting to me, is that Aaron Rodgers is getting married to the lady from the Divergent movies or the Secret Life of the American Teenager. And I find that really sad for her.
Shailene Woodley, right?
Yeah, whatever her name is. Yeah. I think that's really sad for her because Aaron Rodgers sucks. Like, really sucks and keeps spewing horrific garbage out into the world that's just going to kill people.
Yep.
And
yeah,
when your future husband starts doing that, that should be a red flag. But, you know, rich people, Aaron Rodgers sucks. Get vaccinated. Get your booster shot. Do it. All right. Second, soon you, White Book / Props and Slop listeners, will be able to listen or and own your own NFTs of the White Book. There will only be 481 of these. You can send an email to nft@whitebookpodcast.com. We are accepting only Bitcoin and the Ethereum. None of that Dogecoin. But you can own, for example, episode 222 of the White Book, which was the first episode where Glazer, Will, and I went over in-depth strategy of second edition Game of Thrones. You, and there will only be that one non-fungible token of that episode, except for all the ones that are on the RSS feed.
Oh my God.
You could own a piece of the White Book.
Is this some meme I don't get?
Thank you, Roy. Yes, basically it is, Aaron.
All right.
If that doesn't put us in the danger zone, I don't know what does. But also, now that Roy gave me that idea, I'm going to look into setting up NFTs.
Well, you can just download MetaMask, which I am doing now, and turning these episodes. I've already funged those tokens, Will, before you. And if you do that, Will, you'll owe me and you'll have to delete it from your computer. Come on.
No!
Don't be funging my tokens. All right.
Hey. We need to do this for the Fantavi.
Oh, there you go. Sell every episode as we
of create the Fantavi. Yeah. The only one person ever gets to each episode.
Oh, boom. Like that Wu-Tang album that
Scarcity.
That horrible dude who raised those drug prices.
Oh yeah.
Oh, Martin Shkreli, or however you say his last name.
Great. I mean, that was the Wu-Tang created the first non-fungible token. Who knows?
Which is a shame because Wu-Tang is for the children.
It's true, it is. All right, but just when you think NFTs, I want you to think White Book, yes. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Remember, it's very important for you to understand this, though. I am not a financial advisor. I'm not even a financial advisor of my own life. So please do not take financial advice from me. But you should definitely buy our NFTs.
All right. Danger zone or something, I'm going to sleep. Well, I'm going to read a book in bed. We'll be right back.